then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, a vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more bore for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. Put your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely crew. And a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest Homeland, comrades. It's January the 3rd, 2013. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Okay, is everybody over their usual two-month American holiday season? Ready to get to work? Good, because this time I really mean it. Judging from the news, we really don't have much time left. I frankly doubt that we're going to get through Obama's second term without some kind of serious crisis which will have a permanent effect on the future and which could serve as a window of opportunity for us if through some fluke we can ever get our act together. A Jewish Senator Dianne Feinstein, for one, will be bringing in the first serious gun control bill to hit Congress in decades in early January, one which, as I read it on her website, will ban the sale of all semi-automatic weapons, including handguns, and call for all grandfathered weapons to be registered and their owners fingerprinted by the secret police. And that's just a taste of what's coming down the pipe for Obongo's second term. Now, this country changed forever on November the 6th, 2012. The United States is now a totalitarian, neo-Marxist, one-party state, though the outward form of the old system may remain. It will take some years for this new world order to become formalized through the legalization and the registration to vote of the 30 million illegal aliens now resident on this continent, but that's just a matter of time. Now, the NF can no longer afford the luxury of being part of the entertainment industry. For the past 2 years, I've been working on the fifth and last Northwest novel, Freedom Sons, so that was my excuse for not being as engaged as I should have been in the admin and organizing end of things. But the book is now finished, and both PDF and galley copies are available, so I can now try to begin to function as that national organizer we never seem to be able to attract. I kept hoping against hope during the last few years that one of you guys would step forward and take on that role. Well, if wishes were horses, then beggars would ride, and I suppose that's my fault. My standards are way too high, I admit that. Men of the needed caliber are now in exceedingly short supply in our ranks, and the few whom I know of who could handle the job are either in prison or else they're older than I am and in worse health. Now, realistically, the existing movement will not be able to provide such a man for the front. He's going to have to be drawn from the white community itself somewhere. As soon as one of you lucks out and places the NorthwestFront.org website in front of his nose in such a way that he actually goes to the site and is blown away in that cosmic moment of inspiration when a young man finds his purpose in life. Now, in the meantime, I'll take another stab at it until either my legal or my medical situation goes critical and takes me out. Now, I'm going to begin this year's Radio Free Northwest series with a kind of definitive mission statement. Now, some of you will have heard me say all this before, and it'll seem very repetitive, but I have to make sure that you guys can at least internalize what I'm saying and get your arms around the ideas that I'm trying to convey. And my primary technique for that is spaced repetition. Trying to find many ways to say the same thing over and over again until it finally sinks in. Now, tonight and in future podcasts, I will be as specific as I feel I can be. But we always have to bear in mind who's listening to these programs. And so, as always, you guys will need to do a lot of listening between the lines, so to speak. Okay, here goes. The classic definition of stupidity is doing the same thing over and over again while expecting a different result each time. Now, I have just stated, in a nutshell, the entire history of the American white nationalist movement. Now, this essentially is what the white man has been doing for the past 50 years in our pathetic attempts to resist racial and cultural extinction at the hands of the Jews. We have taken the attitude of, if you build it, they will come. Well, we build it, or at least an approximation of it, and they never come. It is now time, and long past time, that we as a subculture acknowledged and faced up to the one inescapable and overriding fact about our wee little white nationalist movement. It hasn't worked. Nothing that we have tried has worked. I'm not going to say that we need to just discard the last 60 years of our subculture's history altogether, or that everything we've done since 1953 has been a total waste. It hasn't been. Well, not quite. There are some lessons to be learned, if only negative ones. I'm not attempting sarcasm or humor when I say that for the past 60 years, we have provided ourselves with a full, complete, and comprehensive model of what not to do and how not to do it. If we are going to have any hope of securing the existence of our people and a future for white children, then all the stuff we've been doing since any of us can remember, we need to stop doing it, and we need to try something else. Now, when you find yourself in a hole, the first thing you need to do is stop digging. Now, white people are no longer capable of responding in the way that we want them to respond to all the standard Rotary Club-style tactics and democracy-based strategies that we've been using. We are going to have to learn to use what Lenin referred to as the conspiratorial method. We are going to have to learn to operate in small cells, like spies behind enemy lines. The days of the big, huge gatherings of hundreds of people, Aryan Nation style, in some kind of compound, those days are over. Now, the problem is not what we've been doing so much as it is the problem is who we are. Yet, since giving up is inadmissible, we have to find a way to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. We have to take some pretty inferior human material and create a genuine national independence movement here in the Pacific Northwest, because it's the last chance that white people will ever have to survive on this North American continent. Now, here are some of our starting points. First off, the present system is absolutely corrupt and utterly beyond redemption. Now, by system, I mean the United States of America as it exists today. I mean the totality of economy, society, diseased pop culture, and government that operates under that name. Although, of course, there are wider implications than the geographic USA when I use the term system, and some of the worst components of that system that's destroying us are outside North America. Israel, places like that, I get that. We can just call it Zog if you like, or the Beast will do nicely. Anyway, it should be obvious by now to anyone with two brain cells to rub together that only a total and complete change in the entire order of society from top to bottom can suffice to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. The short word for this is revolution. We must seek total change, not any kind of reform. There was never any point in participating in elections in a two-party system where all the candidates had their lips firmly pressed to the buttocks of the same Jews, and now there is no more two-party system. I say again, November the 6th, 2012 inaugurated a lengthy period of one-party rule in the United States for reasons I've explained. There is no point in attempting to gain entrance into the power structure of our racial enemy. We simply will not be allowed in, period. End of story. And we will be destroyed or neutralized if we persist in the attempt to work within the system. The power structure and the people who control it will not listen to us. Why should they? We refuse to demand their respect by force, and so they hold us in contempt. No one respects anyone who will not fight for what they believe or in defense of their own existence, and no one should. They've been ignoring us for generations, and they've suffered no adverse consequences. So why shouldn't they continue to do whatever the hell they want for their own benefit and for the Jews who pay them? It's the system itself that threatens our racial and cultural existence, and it's the system itself that has to go. The system does not need to be reformed. It needs to be destroyed and replaced with something designed specifically to deserve the racial interests of white people. It needs to be replaced with a white ethnostate. It needs to be replaced with a sovereign and independent white homeland here in the Pacific Northwest. This is what we are driving at, always. Now, another starting point we need to bear in mind is that change cannot be accomplished solely through education. Education, which in movement terms means confining our attempts at racial resistance to nothing but words, which we hope won't actually make anybody mad, is a cop-out that we've used as an excuse to evade our racial duty for the past 60 years. Ever since Brown versus Board of Education showed us clearly what was coming, and we responded with words and not deeds. Now, it is certainly true that a necessary prerequisite for revolutionary change is that the white man has to change his thinking. It's true that there has to be an alteration in the white man's awareness of the true nature of the world around him and in his intuitive perception of people and events. It's also true that it will be a large part of the mission of the Northwest Revolutionary Party to carry out this function through propaganda, some of which will be educational in nature. However, education and propaganda are means to an end. Now, we've been using education as yet one more fig leaf to avoid incurring the kind of personal risk and doing the kind of heavy lifting that we all know must eventually be done by somebody. We must understand that there will be no escape from our moral duty to relocate to the homeland ourselves as soon as it can be accomplished, and to confront the Zionist state when we're there, and to transfer power from the hands of that state and its minions into our own hands. The question is how difficult this transfer of power is going to be, and that depends on a wide set of circumstances that haven't made their appearance yet. Now, when real men want to change something, they change it. They neither need nor ask for a permission slip from the Jews. They don't worry about whether anybody's going to let them change things. They just do it. They don't consult the people whose self-interest will be affected. Of course, those who currently hold wealth and power and position will never voluntarily surrender it. No one ever does. Now, these people have devoted their lives and careers to doing harm to you and yours. Their desires or opinions in the matter should be disregarded. The people who hold power and wealth in this society use it solely for themselves, to feed their own gargantuan and perverted appetites and egos. And in doing so, they abuse their power and their wealth to do harm. We are ruled by bad people. They have no rights, and they deserve no consideration at your hands. Why would you allow someone to do you harm on the ground that they have rights? That's just silly. It's a rule that bad people made up to protect themselves from being punished for their behavior. Now, we can't accomplish anything by calling a radio talk show host and bitching, or by tapping on a computer keyboard, or by going into a silly little booth and pulling an electronic lever to cast a vote that the Diebold Corporation may or may not decide to count. If we want change, then we change things, if you get my drift. I'm sure you do. Now, we need to discover some way to let our own people know that we're here. Establishment media publicity does not, in and of itself, constitute some kind of success or victory. But until such time as we discover some infallible method of going viral on the internet with our propaganda material, and we can thereby communicate directly with significant portions of the remaining white gene pool, it's going to remain a necessary evil. Now, the trick is to generate mainstream media publicity in such a manner as to portray the Northwest imperative in as positive a light as possible. Now, in our line of endeavor, there is indeed such a thing as bad publicity. We get a lot of it. God knows that we get enough of it when our own people, or else idiots who are portrayed by the mainstream media as being our people, continually show their butts in weird, criminal, and dysfunctional ways. Now, most nationalist groups spend most of their PR efforts, such as they are, in pretty much unsuccessful attempts to pull publicity stunts, to get the television cameras to acknowledge their existence with a soundbite, since to Americans, nothing's actually real unless it's on TV. And these times, establishment media publicity usually means that someone has been selected for victimization and demonizing. It's notorious, even among media people themselves, that the actual news content of American reportage, especially in broadcast media, has diminished down through the years until programming is more often than not just referred to as news entertainment. In some cases, major newspapers and television networks have been caught actually making up major stories in order to get readership and viewer ratings, whatnot. All that being said, we are still stuck problem of increasing our internet audience and also augmenting it with printed publications. For example, I hope to one day see our present fold-over newsletter, Northwest Observer, become a tabloid newspaper for mass distribution like the old Truth at Last. Furthermore, we have to do this fast because we're running out of time as the country descends into a one-party dictatorship, which, in my opinion, will not be able to maintain its grip for long, and after which will come chaos. Now, this means that we need to find ways to use the mainstream media to publicize our existence and give white people some general idea of what we're about, and especially to bring white people to our websites and our publications so we can bypass the mainstream media and communicate directly with our own people. Now, we have to do this, A, with no one getting killed, B, with no one going to prison, and C, without making fools of ourselves through costumes, publicity stunts, standing on a street corner, all five or six of us holding signs, that kind of mess. Now, you know the old media saying about how if it bleeds, it leads? As far as our wee little white nationalist movement's concerned, if it doesn't bleed, it doesn't get any mention at all. That's what we have to get around, this business where doing anything that might get us a few sound bites of system media coverage is usually going to be counterproductive because our people and our resources just get destroyed in the effort in some way. In short, we have to find some way to generate serious and positive coverage in the mainstream media. I admit that at the present, I'm unsure as to how we're going to accomplish this. All I can say is that this is something that has to be done, and it will be. We are Aryans, and we can and we will find a way. Now, despite what I just said about mainstream media coverage, always remember it's a means to an end. We need the mainstream media to bring people to our media. Now, we have to reach the point where serious communication between the party and the white community can be direct from our mouth to their ear, not filtered through the system, thus allowing the Jews and the lefties to put their spin on everything. Now, this is what we need to be using the internet for. To propagate our views to a mass audience, not to play silly little games of King on the Hill on V-bulletin boards and the pseudo-intellectual blogs. The internet can serve as our mass media so long as there is always a next step into the real world from anything we do on the net. The only other way in which we might ever be able to break through the system media filtering and shaping of image and message and so forth and convey our principles and our program to the public via the establishment media in a way that couldn't be misconstrued or misinterpreted, well, that would be actual revolutionary propaganda of the deed. In other words, if we had some small group of people who still had the alpha gene and who were willing to carry out actual real-world direct action. However, that's not a workable idea right now. We lack the human material necessary to make use of that tactic, and we will lack it for quite some time. And that means that a large part of our job for the next few years will be to create an alternate media from the ground up, mostly on the internet, although I say again, we need off-internet propaganda and communication as well, such as a tabloid newspaper. That's a big requirement. Something that we can use if the net ever goes down on us or if we're simply forbidden by the dictatorship's laws to use it. And that may come. Now, we have to use the mainstream media to direct white people to that alternate media, our media. Existing white internet boards like Stormfront and VNN and a lot of the present podcasts are pretty much useless for this purpose because they're controlled by dysfunctional personalities. We're running into the character issue again. Now, you guys are really not going to want to hear this one. But it is unfortunately true. Now, our official formation date for the Northwest Front is November the 5th, 2008, the day after Black Tuesday, when Barack Hussein Obama first gained the presidency through massive vote fraud. That has to be our starting point, because the past 60 years haven't produced anything of lasting value except showing us how not to do it. We are pretty much going to have to start over from scratch. We're going to have to be doing today things that should have been done 40, 50 years ago. Now, the brutal and inescapable fact is that white people have wasted the past 60 years. Everything we had 60 years ago, and I remember some of it, the huge movement, all the buildings and the printing plants and the magazines and the tabloid newspapers, the rally fields and meeting halls on private property, tens of thousands of hardcore members and activists in every organization from the Klan to the ANP to the Citizens Councils, hundreds of thousands of softcore supporters who financed everything. The huge book order businesses, bookstores selling thousands of titles that are now virtually unobtainable, their knowledge forgotten. All of these things are gone now. We pissed all these things up against the wall. For reasons that defy rational analysis, we trusted men we shouldn't have trusted, in spite of the plainest evidence in front of our faces that they were incompetent, dishonest, and/or fatally lacking in intelligence and character. And we ourselves were weak, cowardly, confused, and bone-idle lazy. So it's all gone now. Everything we once had. And we had a lot. Now, we start over from scratch. And I mean from scratch. We must start over with nothing, because effectively speaking, that's what we've got. It must be as if this whole white resistance thing was just an idea that somebody dreamed up on November the 5th, 2008. That doesn't mean that we forget everything that's happened in the past. On the contrary, we have to learn to practice a bizarre kind of Orwellian doublethink. Forgetting it all, not letting it bother us or hold us back, except when it becomes necessary to remember our mistakes, our many, many mistakes, so as not to commit them again. Our movement's past must become to us something like the Versailles Treaty was to the Germans up until 1933. Let's see, how did it go? Denken an es immer, sprechen von ihm nie, I think it was. Think of it always, speak of it never. Now, we now have to begin to lay the kind of foundation-building groundwork that should have been done two generations ago, and which should have been completed by now in the last generation. The white nationalist movement in America, separatist or otherwise, has no infrastructure of any kind remaining. No buildings, no membership, virtually no physical mailing lists left, no money, no major publications. We're going to have to build that infrastructure from the ground up. We have to work on projects and things that should have been done in the 1960s, but which were never done because our self-proclaimed leaders were mostly frauds and incompetents intent more on massaging their own egos and lining their own pockets instead of securing the existence of our people and a future for white children. Now, when some of you hear a lot of this goo-boo goat dancing crap about me on the internet, remember, there was a reason for the way some of us fought against the old fearless leaders. Because we saw with our own eyes that nothing permanent was being accomplished, and that one day we'd end up with nothing to show for 60 years of effort, as did in fact occur. Okay, now let's talk about character. We as a people haven't got much of it, and what we do have is mostly bad. We must always bear in mind just how badly dysfunctional and damaged white people are, how shallow and short-sighted their political thinking is, how seriously impaired white people's ability to understand the consequences of their actions has become, and how urgently white people are possessed by the American-instilled desire for instant gratification, both material and emotional. Gotta have everything now, 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 now! Now, we must never forget that in American white people, especially white males, we're dealing very largely with a group of adolescents who never completely grew up, who have no concept at all of personal responsibility for their behavior, and who become extremely neurotic and unstable through trying to survive and exist in a profoundly unnatural world. It's not most white people's fault that we are the way we are. Now, we've been socially engineered like that. But the fact remains that we are the way we are. It's going to be necessary for us to at least remove the taboo on the discussion of direct action to bring about social and political change. Now, we will never be able to implement a solution when the time is right, when we tremble in terror even to discuss the only possible thing we can do in order to secure the existence of our people and the future for white children. However, we also need to be keenly aware of the practical day-to-day realities of our situation. We are a persecuted minority. We have no power of any kind, and given the new laws that have been passed since 9/11, the establishment can pretty much use any pretext they want to destroy us whenever they want. I have no idea why they haven't done so already. The only thing I can guess at is that for some reason somebody inside the dictatorship has decided that they're not quite ready yet to begin arresting and imprisoning the authors of books, dissident writers, like they did in Russia, although that doesn't seem to have stopped them from murdering Edgar Steele. Basically, in our case, I think they know damn well that nobody's listening, and 5,000 hits per week on our website doesn't worry them. Their muscle man agencies do, in fact, have other fish to fry, the way the dictatorship keeps fucking up and making more enemies all over the world. Not to mention the fact that the various muscle man agencies I refer to are getting ready to implement gun confiscation once Dianne Feinstein's bill passes. And maybe that's why I'm still here every week. Who the hell knows what goes on in the minds of these people? Now, the time for the NVA is not yet. I know that's not what you want to hear, and God knows after 10 years in the homeland, it's not what I want to tell you, but we have to start living in Realville. We have to maintain a keen awareness of the difference between direct action and the stupid illegal act, and also be aware of the fact that we're going to have people floating around on our periphery, or maybe even closer, who don't understand that difference. Now, I'm not talking about the usual federal informers and infiltrators. I'm talking about people among us who are so understandably frustrated and enraged by the misery of life in Obama's America, and who have been socially engineered with the typical 15-minute American attention span so that they won't be able to wait. They won't be able to submit themselves to any kind of discipline and self-control. Now, we're going to have a problem with people who take the Northwest novels too seriously, who can't grasp the difference between fiction and reality, people who believe that if they come here to the Northwest, they're going to be handed a weapon by the NVA and told to go kill somebody or blow something up. Now, at every step, we have to be vigilant against people like this who are joining our Northwest movement from a desire to get something out of it as opposed to put something into it. We're going to have a long-running problem with what Robert Miles referred to as the Wild Eyes, and we need to make sure that they don't screw everything up by going out and doing something stupid and getting everybody dragged into prison on some sort of absurd conspiracy charge. Now, we need to understand why we're here. The object of Northwest migration must be to create a sovereign and independent nation for white people, not to make a Beaver Cleaverville 1950s theme park or two. We are not here to run off into the North Woods and hide from Obama in a remote cabin. Ruby Ridge, Idaho is about as far away from anywhere as it's possible to get on the North American continent. Ask Randy Weaver how well that worked out for him. I get a lot of emails from interested parties asking me, Harold, where can I find some cheap land in the Northwest? They're asking the wrong question. The long-term object of this exercise is not to locate and purchase cheap land and put up trailers or cabins or a compound so far out in the woods that you need to hire a Sherpa guide to find the place. The object of the exercise is to create an independent homeland for all white people the world over, and that can't be done by hiding in a hole in the forest. Sorry, guys, you're not getting off the hook. There is no avoiding the concrete and the asphalt and the horrible, ugly, black and brown booga booga faces. We're going to have to build a genuine, honest-to-God, 1920s, 1930s-style revolutionary political movement, just like Grandma used to make, based largely in the cities and towns of the Northwest, because that's where the people are, that's where the economy is, and that's where the problems are. Not way out in the piney woods. You're going to have to pack that moving van and get your ass up here. And when you get here, you're going to have to work your butt off and not just go fishing. And at some point, you will be required to confront the United States of America and beat them. That's the name of that tune. Nothing can be accomplished until we achieve square one. There is a set of initial requirements for successful public activity on the part of the Northwest Front. This is what we might designate as square one. Nothing can be accomplished without these three basic prerequisites. Nothing. I can't run for election or do much of any other kind of publicity stunt, which is what some of you seem to have some vague idea that you want me to do, unless I begin from square one. I can do an internet radio show like this until the cows come home. Indeed, I've been doing it, well, this is the fourth year now. But if there is no real-world follow-up, then it's just show business, and we don't need show business. We need revolution. The three necessary components are, number one, secure premises, by which I mean a base of operation from which I and others, including that mythical national organizer, if he ever steps forward, can, if necessary, do media interviews, hold small meetings, do initial one-on-one contact interviews, and incur public exposure without finding an eviction notice taped to the door the next morning. Now, neither I nor anyone else can act as a public spokesman or lead anything, fearlessly or otherwise, if we're living in our car or under a bridge. Now, I would, for this purpose, accept a multi-acre compound way, way out in the Northwoods someplace, so long as it had adequate power and sewage and structures on it, if any rich man comes along and wishes to donate such a property, if that's the only thing going. I've already said we need to be in the urban areas, but right now, frankly, I'll take what I can get. Actually, though, I would prefer a series of small offices and public contact points in urban areas where the people and the problems are and where our cause will be won, because we will reach those white people who live there, convince them, and motivate them to act. Now, the second prerequisite is a small staff of reliable Class A people who are physically present at my side, not hiding behind computers hundreds of miles away. These people have to serve as our general headquarters unit, the people who actually help me. Now, one of the major objectives of the NF will be to build a series of white nationalist communities, like I said, people who live within half an hour's drive of one another all across the homeland. One such white nationalist community, possibly the first we create, must be our GHQ element, since they'll be providing the tools for the creation of all the rest. All right, now it looks like that GHQ will be located somewhere in the Pugetopolis area, largely for economic reasons. No one can claim that they can't get a job in a city the size of Seattle. Now, this is unless, as I mentioned earlier, that aforementioned rich man suddenly materializes out of the mists of cyberspace and hands me the deed to some piece of rural property in buggered Beaver, Oregon, or wherever. Now, I will take something like that if it's all I can get in exchange for a reasonably stable base of operations, or as stable as it's possible for us ever to get, put it that way. Now, the third thing we're going to need is a sum of startup capital to get the effort going and to acquire necessary plant and facilities. Now, at some point, the checkbooks are going to have to be talked open or forcibly pried open, but that's a subject for another time. Okay, quick theoretical reminder as to just how we intend to accomplish our primary objective insofar as we can speak of how we intend to accomplish it, and that may not be very far. Now, we know how revolutions occur because we've seen it happen over the past 100 years all over the world. Well, let's hit that revolutionary tripod again. Remember, this is spaced repetition. I'm going to keep it up until these ideas sink into our minds and become second nature to our thinking. Now, number one, and this is just historical observation here, there must be a bona fide movement in the form of a fighting revolutionary party for there to be a revolution. Now, this movement must be devoted not towards reforming the existing system, but to wrenching the state directly from the hands of the existing power structure and the subsequent destruction of the old order to make sure that counter-revolution is impossible. Now, number two, there has to be withdrawal of the consent of the governed, wherein a majority of the people in the territory, colony, whatever, no longer wish to be ruled by the existing power structure, and they desire change. Specifically, that power be assumed by the bona fide revolutionary movement I mentioned and none other. Thirdly, and this is the point where we tend to get into trouble and start dancing along the legal line here, bearing in mind again, I'm speaking purely in theoretical terms here, but in order for there to be a revolution anywhere, there must be the loss of the credible monopoly of armed force by the state. It must become possible, and in fact an everyday occurrence, for the subject population to defy the oppressor's laws with impunity. Acts of insurrection and guerrilla warfare have to take place. Actual and serious physical damage must be inflicted on the enemy, and no one must be caught or punished for these acts. Now, we are not seeking to do here in the Northwest anything that has not been done at least 24 times in the past 200 years, and in some cases in countries far larger and more powerful than our own attenuated version of the USA. Our road is long and hard, but it's not impossible. We can win, and we will. Now, the second and the third elements listed in the revolutionary tripod I just spoke of, we can't do anything about until events intervene and the time is right. But the developments of the past 4 years seem to prognosticate that our window of opportunity is indeed approaching. But the achievement of the first requirement, and that's the creation of a bona fide fighting party or revolution, that's up to us. The real stuff, the right stuff, that's what we've got to create. 1920 style, like Grandma used to make. Real people for a real world. Men and women who understand that it's not just a game, it's not just a hobby, it's not entertainment, and above all, it's not all about them. Men and women who join this party because they want to put something into it, not get something out of it. Now, that's a first step. Now, we need to take it. We need to stop talking about it on this podcast and start actually doing all this stuff. This business of wait until the balloon goes up before we take even the first few preparatory steps, that's rubbish. We may not be able to control when or how the balloon goes up, but we can be ready for it when it happens. Now, I keep hearing these moans from a lot of people about, oh, Harold, we want action. You're not providing action, Harold. You're not doing anything. You're just talking on the computer. We'll come and help you, Harold, but you got to do something. You got to give us action. Okay, fine. Action you may have. You can have all the action you can stand with the Northwest Front. But there is a catch. You have to provide it. No one is simply going to hand it to you as an entitlement. The problem is that the NF is still basically part of the entertainment industry. That has to do with our character. I provide you with things to read, things to listen to, and now with my occasional YouTube videos, things to watch on TV. Now granted, that's not action, it's entertainment. The action comes when you start packing that moving van for the Northwest Homeland. Action doesn't have to be, you know, wiring a bomb to somebody's car or anything like that. Action can be perfectly legal. This is where we are falling down. Fewer people attend the average wedding reception for the free cake and champagne than have migrated so far. All throughout this mighty country of over 300 million people, we can't find more than a tiny, tiny handful of Aryan men and women who haven't had the alpha gene socially engineered out of them, and who are willing to commit a simple, perfectly legal act in support of the 14 words. Now, I'm not saying that these people are not out there. I know they are. More than enough of them to create our new Northwest Republic. What I'm saying is we can't find them with only one man looking. They're out there all right. They just don't know we're here. With only one man posting, with only one man out there searching for them, we're not going to find enough of them in time to be of any use. Never mind contacting them, interesting them, bringing them up to speed, and then motivating people to devote their lives to a new nation in the Northwest as a homeland. We need to concentrate on building those viable communities in key areas across the Northwest I keep talking about. I consider a basic team of 5 to 6 people in a locality enough for a kind of community nucleus. Large urban areas such as Seattle and Portland and Spokane will need multiple 5 to 6 man nuclei, foci, cells, teams, crews, whatever the hell you want to call them. Anyway, a small group of people who carry out public activism, at least some, either overtly or covertly, people who are organizing and educating within a generally defined territory or an area of operations. So you can call them the local unit. We will need trouble trios in the following localities and one GHQ unit. They need to be placed more or less in the following pivotal locales. Seattle, Spokane, South Sound, by which I mean Tacoma on down to Centralia, Washington Tri-Cities, Kennewick, so forth and so on, Portland, Oregon, Oregon South, which would be Medford, Klamath Falls, Oregon Central, which would be around Bend, Oregon Coastal, around Newport, Coos Bay, up and down the coast there, Highway 101, Coeur d'Alene in North Idaho, also including Hayden Lake, Sandpoint, that area, Pocatello and Idaho Falls, Boise, Eugene, which is going to be hard because of that goddamn university down there, and Kalispell, Missoula, and Helena in western Montana. Now, these areas will be our very general starting points, our first operational areas. I understand that we're going to have some good people who live outside these areas, and we are willing to make use of anyone anywhere in the homeland. Now, you'll notice that this means incomers need to be encouraged to settle in urban areas, where the problems are, where the people are, and where the politics happens, not run off and hide in a log cabin way out in the woods. Now, that'll be one of our quality control measures. Guys who want to run off into the woods and hide usually don't make good revolutionaries. They're thinking defensively, and revolution requires boldness and the offensive. Remember this, the party is not about survival. It's about changing the world through resistance and victory. Well, let's recap. The Northwest Front needs to begin by creating white nationalist communities, and by that I mean groups of at least half a dozen racially conscious whites living, working, and engaging in political and racial struggle in some kind of accord or concerted effort. These are people who will live within half an hour's drive of one another, and who interact regularly on a physical off-internet basis. It would actually be best if these half dozen community members were, in fact, couples with families. As many of you have noticed, the white nationalist movement is top-heavy with single men. That's not surprising, seeing as how the white marriage rate is fading away. Half of all white marriages now end in divorce, and white males are the ones who are getting the full brunt of the shaft from Obama's America. But we need to start dealing with this problem as best we can. I knew a guy once who was dead serious about building a beaver cleaverville in Idaho. And one of his proposed quality control measures was that he wanted only migrants who were still married to their first spouses and who had kids. Now, I can see where the guy was coming from, but the simple fact is that the movement can't really meet that standard all the time anymore. Nobody in white America can. The days of Beaver Cleaver and the Brady Bunch are frankly gone. By communities, I do not mean a commune or a compound way out in the woods where everybody sits around and goes, "Om," listening to the words of the Guru Herald. I don't mean a remote log cabin where we can all run out in the woods to hide. Neither do I refer to a real estate scam selling worthless home lots in some undeveloped place in rural Idaho someplace. I don't mean a cave where we all dig tunnels and load up with full auto weapons and MREs so we can await Armageddon like troglodytes. I'm not making that up, by the way. I think Starship Ruthie and the Unarians are still dug in somewhere out there in Montana. They went underground, quite literally. Now, by white communities, I don't mean some little town where we try to buy up all the property, create a 1950s theme park, take over the city council, and secede from the union on the basis of some obscure pre-1861 legal code. It's not 1861 anymore. If the federal government was going to obey their own laws, there wouldn't have been a civil war. The South lost, and the imperial federal government won. And the government and the courts simply ignore any legal arguments anybody else has, including the Constitution when it suits them. Ever since Barack Hussein Obama was allowed to get away with enacting the Dream Act by decree after Congress rejected it twice, and nothing was done to impeach his caramel-colored ass, the whole legal protest and defense ship has sailed. From now on in America, Volus princeps lex est, the will of the prince is the law. You can't use the law to defend yourself when it doesn't exist any longer. What we need are places where there is a core group of white racial nationalists living and working at normal jobs that pay actual money within 30 minutes drive of one another, where we can have a weekend barbecue if we want to without a year's notice and without everybody having to save up for plane fare, where we see each other all the time and help not just me, but each other, you know, a community. Local communities where we can actually begin the process of converting all those local Northwest people, like I'm somehow supposed to be doing all on my own around here with my Harry Potter-like magic powers. Communities where we can start weaving the safety net and setting up the picnic tables and laying out the first round of cakes and ale, which will in turn attract other settlers, who will, in theory, in turn help us attract more white people and lay out more cakes and ale and strengthen the safety net, etc., etc. You get the idea. We don't need an NVA or armed struggle or the balloon going up to start building the homeland. We can do that right now if we want to.
Thank you.
On the morning of January the 1st, one of the first things I did is I went to my stat counter and did an analysis of what kind of traffic this site got during the year 2012. For the record, I did not count page loads. We had almost 500,000 of those. Now, that's when someone moves around within the site and looks at different pages, and I know counting those would be cheating. Also, I did not attempt to figure out how many actual listeners Radio Free Northwest has per se, as opposed to site visitors. Because I know some of you actually download the podcast, and some just listen to it on your computer straight from the server. And I don't have any way to tell when anyone does that. Now, we also have a stat for returning visitors that shows how many times someone visits the site. But without sitting and puzzling over it for hours, I have no real way to parse those in any meaningful way. The counter usually shows slightly over 5,000 unique hits per week, but some of those are returning visitors. Now, needless to say, the count jumps on Wednesday and Thursday when I have a new Radio Free Northwest up. I think the best way is to look at unique hits. Anyway, according to the counter, we received just slightly over 200,000 unique hits from individuals last year. 200,344 to be exact. I'm not really sure how best to quantify these hits, but I can tell you this, it's not enough. That is chicken feed on an internet where a YouTube video of two negresses fighting in a McDonald's can get a million hits in the first 36 hours, and a video of a cute puppy chasing a ball or something of the kind can get 2 million. It's certainly not enough for the result that we're getting. I've said before when discussing this program's audience that we always have to assume that a certain percentage of our listeners are, for one reason or another, totally useless as far as any practical support or participation in the Northwest migration goes. FBI and SPLC spies, Jews, Antifas, assorted white dumbasses and dysfunctional, so forth and so on. However, I remain convinced that we have enough of a hardcore and supportive audience just for this little podcast so that if we can ever get just them activated, get them giving 110% of their effort and their time and their resources, get them participating in the 10 by 1,000 voluntary dues program to cure our financial problems, then we could make it just on what we've got. Now, I won't get into that anymore now. I will simply state once again that we have to get more people listening to this podcast in 2013. A lot more. And we have to increase the number of visitors to this website. Now, some of you have wondered how it is that we haven't been hacked or taken down by now. Well, in point of fact, we have had a few incidents, but nothing that interrupted service yet. Now, one of the signs that the Northwest Front is becoming effective will be when there are more DOS and other hack attacks on the northwestfront.org site. Now, with a view towards making sure that the usual suspects can never destroy our web presence completely, I think it's all right for me to mention at this time that we should be getting at least 2 additional Northwest Front websites online very soon. But that doesn't mean that we don't need more listeners to RFN. I'm now beginning our 4th year, and the idea seems to have caught on. There's a lot of white nationalist podcasts out there now competing with us, and I have to admit, some of them are pretty good. But the fact remains that only the Northwest Front has the idea that will secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. A sovereign and independent homeland for all our people here in the Pacific Northwest. Please, guys, if you honestly do not feel that you can do anything else at all for this vital cause, can you at least spend 2013 doing everything you can on the web and elsewhere to increase this program's listenership? One of those listeners will be the young man who eventually leads us to victory and freedom. We haven't found him yet, at least I don't think we have. We need him. Please, guys, find him for me. Well, look, time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98104. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Andaban. Freedom.